Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello, everybody.
Watcher.
Hello, we're back.
Hello.
More games being played.
Yes, I'm going to tell you about them. I thought it's probably high time we had a static group roundup. I haven't really talked about the online games, the MMORPGs that we play on regular weekly sessions and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because, I don't know, there's this sort of sense, I think, that we hate MMOs, and we're now playing LAN games on a Friday, but that's not the case at all. We're still going with quite a few. Well, you're not. I don't know. Well, I am.
Yeah.
I'm still playing MMOs because, I don't know, Stockholm Syndrome mostly, I think, probably, at this stage. But, no, still playing quite a few different things, so let's go through the week. So Monday's Pathfinder, not talking about that here. That's Pen and Paper with Roll20.net website there. That's a lot of good fun there. Might have to talk about that separately sometime.
You have once before, I think.
Yes. It's a good fun though, good system, and quite old school. You know, we use Pathfinder game, a role-playing game system, which essentially is a 3.5 AD&D rework when Wizards of the Coast themselves gave up on doing D&D that way and turned it into some tabletop war game. And we've been going for years and years in there now. I GM, I quite enjoy it. It's nice to have the whole world in your head. Nice to be the server, you know, for a change.
Yeah.
You can make all sorts of exceptions and style the gameplay to however you like.
The lag's terrible.
The lag's pretty bad, yeah. Yeah, my party have developed this new skill. They've all managed to learn quite a few ranks in stun GM.
Yeah.
Usually by using a spell that they've suddenly found from somewhere and haven't told me about, and then I have to go away and look it up, and the whole encounter comes grinding to a halt. It's a good way to stall if it looks like I'm about to kill them. I nearly killed one of them this week.
Only
unconsciousness, on the floor, bleeding out. Yeah, that's like two or three rounds away from death, but they managed to claw it back. It's quite exciting, and they're still not out of that dungeon yet. It's good times. I don't know what video you're going to show for that. You're probably not going to show anything.
Oh, I'll improvise.
No, all right, let's crack on with the actual stuff then. So Tuesdays is The Old Republic, Star Wars The Old Republic, SWTOR, what have you. I'm still playing that. I don't know why.
I don't know why.
You were part of this group for a while, weren't you?
So I took the sensible option.
Yes. No, we're still playing. I mean, I enjoy the company of my friends, obviously, but that's not enough in itself because we could be playing any game. I guess the point with SWTOR is that I've ranted lots before about my wild hopes and dashed expectations about the fourth pillar and story, and at the end of the day it is a BioWare story, so probably the BioWare story. I've thought I really want to see the end of at least one character arc, you know, up to 50 or up to the end of the main launch content. There's some expansions, some Huck Cartel stuff, some Fallen Empire stuff where the story goes on a little bit more and isn't quite the same and is not as well voice acted or plotted or whatever. And I'm not sure if it's even class specific at that point. I don't know.
But, never going to find out.
Well, expansions.
I could look it up, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I sometimes think that because we've sort of developed a kind of barely paying attention scorn to the story as it is now because it's not really that interesting. We tend to click through and chat through cutscenes and things. Mostly it's about the journey and the dungeons, you know, the flashpoints, I believe they call them in there, are still quite good. We did the Kadamimo one, which was essentially charging around in a sort of city tile set with loads of robots and that kind of thing. Unfortunately, we're all troopers. None of us have knockback as useful skill. So, but the main fun of going Kadamimo is seeing how many of the enemies you can just knock clear off ledges, which is bad for looting, but
terrible for looting.
Yeah, but hysterical all the same. Going there with a full party of Jedi with all the push and pull force powers and stuff, a lot of fun. But got through there. I think we did another one as well, and I can't remember. it's that kind of thing. So yes, sort of going through the motions there a bit, really. it's serviceable, but it's not really that inspiring. We're working on the stock. On the main story there for the trooper class, we've done, we did Tatooine, the obligatory visit to the desert planet, which appears to be the hub and focus of Star Wars adventures far more often than warrants, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Backwater planet where nothing ever happens.
Yeah. And yet we're there every time, every outing, every trip. But that's okay, you know. The Old Republic's Tatooine's a different thing. For starters, they've got this weird lighting shader model thing, yeah, which basically means that pretty much everything everywhere has a slight lit from the side by a blue light glow to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you not remember this? That look? You'll probably see it in some of the stock footage and stuff. And they've applied this to Tatooine as well, which is absolutely... It's essentially a universal engine thing.
Yeah.
So almost everything has this weird sort of being lit faintly from the side by a blue light look to it, which is part of their stylistic choices and works fairly well in the city tile sets and stuff. But on a desert planet, it just makes the whole place look like it's cold and damp, you know? Which is weird. Not a Tatooine look at all. You want sort of harsh, burning, overlit yellows, not sort of side-lit, subdued
sort of
blue
a bit
lighting.
Like Tunisia or somewhere.
Well, yes, very much so. It's not a difficult look to get right. I mean, I refer you to Star Wars Galaxies, which I always found to be a very convincing Tatooine, you know, for its time. But yeah, so I just didn't really believe we were there, to be honest, for most of that. It was very odd. Lots of sand speedering across the deserts, and we threw ourselves in the Sarlacc pit.
Yay!
Got a t-shirt and everything. You do. You actually get an achievement and a title if you jump into the Sarlacc.
Is it the Sarlacc?
It is the Sarlacc.
Not a Sarlacc.
The Sarlacc, apparently.
Yeah. Because I've always wondered, how long does the Sarlacc live?
Well, 3,000 years at least, according to this.
I thought it was more like 10, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know. It's there in the Old Republic. Yeah. It's there in New Star Wars. So clearly it's the same one, and we definitely went in there and jumped in. And I saw it in Galaxies as well. The one in Galaxies is about 12 feet across.
Yeah.
And it's got this invisible force field to stop you jumping in it. The one in the Old Republic's quite sizable. It's actually about three or four times the size of the one we see in The Return of the Jedi. So who knows what's going on there? I don't. But anyway, Tatooine, basically hub-to-hub-to-hub quests all done, and then we basically off to Alderaan. Nice planet, shame if anything happened to it.
Yeah.
Alderaan...
Please take care. Everything you do there has bearing on the future.
Yeah, you can do what you like there. It's because we never see Alderaan at all during the actual films, apart from one sort of...
There's one external shot.
There's one external shot CG'd up during the prequels, which... depicts it as a kind of, I don't know, a bit like Naboo, really.
Yeah.
Waterfalls and greenery and stuff. So the Alderaan we're visiting...
Like Switzerland.
The Alderaan we're visiting is basically generic MMO pine forest zone merged into generic MMO snowy pine forest zone.
Yeah.
So there you go. Somewhat underwhelming. It's beset with large ant people who are a pest and who we go and exterminate for no better reason
ant
than
people.
some ant, yeah, humanoid ant type things.
Okay.
Kilix or something like that, and I'm sure that's a name I've heard elsewhere used, but in other games. But yes, so generally, it's the LOTRO problem, isn't it? It's the when Turbine do bits of Lord of the Rings online that are very highly detailed and explained in the books, they're actually quite good and quite you know, immersive and do them a good job. But when they reach bits of the story of bits of Middle Earth that don't feature in any of Tolkien's work at all, they have to sort of make up their own thing, and they invariably revert to type a standard generic MMO zone number one, zone number two, and so on. And that a lot of that happens in the Old Republic as well, as far as I can tell. The planets that don't actually feature in any of the official proper media tend to be quite generic MMO style, you know, biomes that we're familiar with from World of Warcraft onwards, really. So not helping. But
also, I love the idea of there being non-human enemies on planets which have been settled and civilized for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah, because they actually blow up Alderaan during during A New Hope. So, you know, this Alderaan place continues on for 3,000 years after we visit it in the Old Republic. And basically, it's a big planet covered in noble houses that are all at war with each other. And obviously, if you're part of the Republic, you get to side with House Organa.
Of course.
Yep, absolutely. We're there. And I was just thinking, wow, if I kill the right grandparent here, we could just sort all this out for good, well down the line. I start thinking four-dimensionally, and the game really doesn't support that. So, hey-ho. If you're a Sith, you start...
Sort it out for all. Are you actually working on the side of the Emperor at that point?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, this is a recurring theme amongst our little static group, is that we all think we probably should have signed on with the Empire, actually, because we're all quite ruthless, all quite anti stability and order.
The Empire's had their fill of Havoc Squad recruits.
Yes. Why didn't they take us? What, are we not good enough?
Nobody even asked.
No, exactly. The whole rest of the squad got defecting. We got left behind. So if you start as Sith, if you're playing through as the Empire side, you start on the far other end of the planet at that point, and you get to sign up with House Thule, a suitably sinister sounding name that was made up just for this, I think.
It's usually Thule.
Is it? No, Thul.
Okay.
Yeah. then a Thull, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're basically fighting the Organas and stuff. And I suppose the original intent was that this planet turns into a massive open world PvP battlefield, but hardly anyone flags up anyway, so I don't think PvP's really a thing there. It's one of those MMOs you don't really go to for the PvP.
Or as we like to call them, most MMOs.
Most MMOs, yeah. So we're still tinkering along. I think it's mostly stubbornness at this point. I've got this far. I'd like this character is now equal with the other two characters I'd gotten as far as possible in that game. So I'm hoping to break past that point and actually get to the end of
the
story.
The last 5 minutes of content.
Yeah, yeah. Get that story done and then what? I don't know. Maybe carry on. Maybe pick a different game for the Tuesday slot. Who knows? We'll see when we get there. But I feel like I ought to at least give them the benefit of the doubt, do them the courtesy of seeing all the content they put in there at launch, at least, before making any kind of harsh judgments and pronouncements on this kind of here podcast. But so far, it's aggressively indifferent, my opinion, on the Old Republic. But we'll see. I'll keep going with it. It's the spectacle of moment-to-moment fighting is quite fun. You've got a whole lineup of troopers all mortaring the stuff and chucking grenades everywhere. I mean, I quite enjoy the basics of combat, which is your standard MMO tab targeting hotkey jobs, but they do a really good job. It like Star Trek Online, they do a really good job of the noises and the visuals. They really sort of
if you can't get the noises right in Star Trek or Star Wars,
exactly, and they do. You do really feel like you're in a Star Wars fight. But the sort of wider, larger aspects of it, I don't know if I'm just starting to get bored of MMOs as a format or whether the Old Republic itself is to blame. But I don't know, just not really that fussed either way. So happy enough to sort of follow the theme park ride to the end rather than jump off it midway through, but not that super keen about starting loads more alts afterwards anyway. So yeah, that's the Old Republic. Do you want to talk about a thing, or shall I crack on with the rest of my week? Okay, so what's next? I can't remember now. There's Thursday's Minecraft Regrowth. We do that. Yes. Well, you can watch the Regrowth podcast there. But we're doing well, aren't we? I think we're getting to the end of the seeds now, finally.
We're nearly at the end of the seeds.
I hope.
Not in the ones they're watching. They've still got a couple of weeks of
seeds. You, dear listener, are somewhat behind, but we've recorded a few seeds.
But actually,
then
I've just finished, just before we recorded, propagating the penultimate batch of seeds.
There's another batch beyond that, and then I think we've got everything. Yeah. And then we can start doing some interesting things, hopefully.
It's all interesting.
It is all interesting from a horticultural gardener's
There's
world perspective.
Too.
Yes.
We did Nether.
We did a Nether expedition. Yeah. Has that one gone up yet?
No.
Ah, you're in for a treat. Yeah. That was awesome. I'm really quite enjoying the Nether. I think we should permanently move there.
I'm
or at least create an outpost.
Yeah, we should
certainly
definitely create an outpost.
Yeah. So good times ahead there. So Fridays is the alternate week's games cupboard land game thing, and I think we're doing Civilization 5 for the next one. We're still some uncertainty about what the actual format of that is, whether we want to go with a play by email thing, offline, and just keep submitting terms until we're done, which could potentially take years, or whether we want to do just spend 3 hours on a Friday night, go nice tight scenario at the start so everyone's thrown into the thick of it, and then just keep crashing on with it until 3 hours have passed and see who's got the highest score or who's left. That might be a way. I think both might work. Anyway, so, but we got the EGX Resd thing coming up some weekend soon, so I've sort of postponed
this weekend.
This weekend, wow, blimey. By the time you listen to this, .. yeah, all that. Probably postpone that for a week. But anyway, the other weeks, we're still playing Rift on the alternate Fridays, because lots of people have put lots of effort in to get up to a high level that can come and play with us, and we should let them do that. So, we're still doing that. So this last week, we had a go at Glacial Moor, which was the last of the Plane of Water normal mode dungeons. Everyone has to be 65 to get in there. And it's on an icy glacier. It's all cosmic horrors from beyond the edge of the universe and stuff. There's all sorts of really quite hideous creatures in there. There's a whole section where you have to go inside the dead esophagus of a giant three-headed dragon thing.
Lovely.
Run down its larynx or whatever into its stomach, and then you can see its heart there beating away, and that's one of the end bosses. There's some nut job.
Is it like that scene in the Gears of War game?
No, you don't have to do much sawing. Okay. It's the floor slightly
that's
pulses
the best,
in places.
Surgery scene in any game ever.
That was horrid. I hope I have to never do that again. Yeah. There's some cosmologist chap who's trying to bring this ancient dead god back to life, and in order to make himself an ascended. Everyone wants to be an ascended. I mean, the players are ascended right from the word go, and it's not that special. But all the NPCs and factions and power groups, and they keep trying to replicate the process so they can become immortal super MMO characters instead.
Not surprised.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't want to be me? But yeah, they keep failing. We managed to swat it down. We got it done. I can't remember if there was any wiping or not. There might have been one of the initial pulls went a little bit skewy. Then we went and did one of the Storm Legion dungeons as well. It was not quite everyone's at level 65 yet, but we're getting there. Another week or two, I think. Yeah. We'll be able to do like proper 65 raid. So we've never done that. We've done so far. Our raid progression is at 10 man level 60 raids, which we've not managed to finish yet. So I'm not sure what level 65 actual raiding is. I think we're going to start hitting gear thresholds and grinds for equipment and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
You're making it sound so exciting.
I'm making it sound very optimistic. I'm making it sound like anyone with enough derring do and a positive attitude can just rock up and try this stuff. But what I suspect is actually the case is that these tasks are highly mathematically specified. You cannot achieve these things without this number. That's your gear scores and all your eye levels in WoW and all this sort of thing. I mean, there's a stat on the equipment in Rift called plus hit, which is, you know, an innocuous and short-sounding name for a whole slew of mathematics, which essentially makes it impossible for noobs and random casuals like us to try any of this stuff on the end game. You've got to make the very most difficult stuff special and elite. Otherwise, your hardcore players tend to just, you know, tend to lose interest and go away. And they're the movers, they're the shakers, they're the opinion formers, the people who are loud on forums, who run and maintain large guilds. You've got to cater to these people. So, I don't know. We'll see how far we get. I want to try it, obviously, but I don't want to be setting people homework, and I don't want people, you know, being shouted away from a Friday night session because they're not good enough or anything like that. That's just nonsense, because it's nothing about them. It's no judgment of their characters at all. Okay, maybe you don't grind enough in Rift.
That just makes me like you more.
That's a positive. Yeah. That's a positive attribute, I think. But get to level 65. We'll have a modest gear check. We can do some very sort of, you know, yeah, we can get reasonable gear crafted for everyone, and then we'll just have a go. And if it's a real pain and not fun, we'll stop. You know, that's the key, isn't it? It's, you know, when faced like something like that, some guilds self-destruct, some guilds just go off and try another game, some guilds start shouting at each other and firing people and hiring other people from other guilds until eventually they can do this stuff.
Yeah, never become that.
And then, well, you have to enjoy it for its own sake, because at some point there'll be a 5-level cap increase, and at some point there'll be all your gear will be useless, all that stuff you spent ages grinding up points for. There'll be a whole nother stuff, because MMO needs to keep you playing for long periods of time. This is all holdovers from the subscription gaming era, where you had to keep people playing for multiple months and keep them interested month after month after month. Yeah. In the free-to-play era, I thought that would all go away. I thought the design would change. Yeah, okay, the design changes to a different footing. You know, the people who pay the most in the cash shop have the best advantages and perks. Well, that doesn't seem unfair to me, to be honest, in this sort of way we live. But either way, I can neither spend, you know, 40 hours a week raiding in one MMO, or spend, you know, $80, $100, $150 in a cash shop in one MMO. So neither way works for me. But that's fine, because I've long since learnt to change my expectations to the point where I know that stuff's not for me. Doesn't matter.
No.
Have fun getting there, then leave.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fine. So the long-term future of Rift, I don't know. We'll everyone gets characters to level 65 in the guild, and then we just keep doing the 65 stuff until people are fed up and don't want to do it anymore. And, you know, hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later. In other words, that I hope people don't cling on to that and force themselves to go through that because they don't want to let everyone else down, because that kind of interdependency guilt is precisely what keeps people playing MMOs far longer than they should.
Oh yeah.
All my friends are relying on me, I can't stop, you know. And if everyone is silently thinking that, no one is saying, hang on, this is rubbish, then yeah.
I would always say, hang on. Yeah,
we've got a couple of people in the regular turn-up who will just say that, and that's good. I really value that kind of reality check, because it lets everyone else just think, well, yeah, actually, no, this is rubbish, we can stop now or whatever. But yeah, I'm still playing Rift. Still going on with Rift. They're adding new souls, I think, is the latest thing in there. So you'll pay some cash shop gems to unlock more roles and more capabilities for your class, different ways to play your class. Apparently there's a good solid single target healer for the warriors. I think the mage, they're talking a lot about the mage who gets a really powerful single target sustained heal and buff protection, which is useful because the existing mage has one heal soul, and that soul is very much a kind of heal over time shaman type thing. It involves damaging enemies to power the healing. It's a very complicated class, yeah. And none of the mages I know enjoy playing healer. So a good solid press button dispense hit points type healer for the mage would be really useful. I'm not quite sure what the others get, what the cleric and the rogue and primalist get. I guess the primalist probably needs a support role of some sort because they don't have anything at the moment, which means they just can't queue in Dungeon Finders for the purple flag slot, which yeah. You know, is a useful way of stopping three DPSs trying to queue all the time. Basically what they've done is they've just created this extra role called support and then taken one of the DPS requirements out of the team to just try and balance it a bit. Yeah, I don't like the warrior support thing. I mean, you just stand there giving out tons and tons of buffs and you know, occasionally hitting stuff with an axe a bit. And most of the buffing is automatic anyway, so... Yeah. So, yeah, still playing Rift. So then we've got the Saturdays, which is the Star Trek Online little mini group we've got going at the moment. I'm thinking about other plans for Saturdays, but I'll talk about that another time. But... So we're at the moment, there's four of us sort of sometimes playing in there. We're doing the Delta Rising stuff, which is all the Delta Quadrant stuff. It's all aimed at Captain levels 50 to 60. We're all there now. And leveling to the top in that game is really not difficult at all. For starters, you've got your Duty Officers and your Admiralty system, which dispense vast amounts of XP for just not playing at all. You know, you log in, you set them doing a stuff, you go away, you come back. Hey, now I've leveled three times, you know, or whatever. That almost to the point of absurdity, really. In fact, I think Torags managed to level a character from about 15 when we gave up our last static group up to about 60 or so, nearly 60, just doing duty officer missions. You know, it's
that sounds riveting gameplay.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing of itself. But why bother trying to work really, you know, particularly in a game where the mentoring and the sort of psychicking and stuff works as well as it does. It adjusts the content to match your level and the loot and whatever. So you might as well just level to the top before even starting any of the story gameplay, because it all scales and you get decent gear then, instead of, you know, doing all this effort and then getting some Mark III photon torpedoes, which you're going to grow out of straight away. Might as well hit the level cap and then start doing all this stuff. I don't know. So it's a way.
Yeah.
So the Delta Rising stuff is all right. It's good and bad. For starters, fans of the actual, you know, proper Star Trek will enjoy it, because you've got pretty much all of the cast of Voyager come in to do voice work. What?
Fans of the real Star Trek enjoy Voyager.
Some sort of internecine Trek fan strife that I've stumbled into. Fans of Voyager will enjoy this.
I don't believe there's such a thing.
I'm a fan of Voyager. I mean, I must admit, I did get bored after Series 2 or whatever, but
yeah,
I never saw the end. But, you know, apart from that, I approve Voyager exists. Yes. Anyway, so, well, whatever. There's a lot of voice work in there from most of the Voyager cast. They didn't get Janeway, they didn't get Chakotay, but pretty much everyone else is there doing little bits. And Tuvok's running the show. He's like your main go-to NPC guy who's, you know, leading this Dyson Sphere-led charge back into the Delta Quadrant to fight off the Vadoir and Menace and all the rest of it. There's some good nods to the original series. Pretty much everyone, every race they meet in Voyager gets a little bit of side mission time in there.
Which is actually good, because otherwise they'd have to invent something new, and that would suck.
So we've been working through there. Now, the structure of the story through there is a bit cheaty in a way. It's because what they do is they have a proper mission with voice work and you know, fan service NPCs and everything. And then every two of those, there's a now go and patrol five planets mission step, where you basically have to just go to a planet, fly around shooting some random aliens, and then do it five times, and then you can have some more story. So that bogs you down a bit, although you can judiciously use the skip mission thing there. The episode chains allow you to skip particular missions on a fairly regular basis, so you might as well do that for those patrol mission things.
They not give out Uber loot.
They do. They're worth it. Also, Delta marks if you're doing the rep grind for the Delta Alliance reputation track there. So you can do them or you can not do them. But halfway through this thing, you get a ground zone. And this is a proper open ground zone where you can see other players, okay. not just an instance. Well, I say proper ground zone. actually, I had a look at the change instance thing the other day when we were trying to work out how to get all into the same one to play together. And the ground zone takes 15 players. So, you know, fair enough. Slightly open.
Massively multiplayer, you say?
Well, no, yeah, but that's such an abused term, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Never. No game has ever. I think possibly EVE, maybe, is the only proper MMO out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
EVE, you can theoretically all appear in the same star system and fight each other.
You
and
just have to call ahead and say, yeah, could yeah. you book us a server?
Yes, yeah, you have to let them know in advance if you can do anything stupid crazy. But yeah, I mean, there's some recent big, massive goons versus someone or other war going on at the moment in there, and apparently there were battles of about 7,000 players in one system.
Yeah, see, that is an MMO.
That's an MMO, yeah. Yeah, pretty much everything else, even, you know, the old school stuff, everyone go World of Warcraft. I think the World of Warcraft had about 2,000 players per server, something yeah. like that. I know EverQuest 1 originally had about 1,500, perhaps less. And those were considered massively, but so
everything gets instanced.
Well, everything's instanced to some degree. It's just nowadays it tends to be an instance of four rather yeah. than 4,000. But there you go. Anyway, so you end up with this ground zone, Kabali Prime. I don't even remember the Kabali, a race of like purple skin, forehead people. I don't know.
Can't remember.
Yeah, some Voyager monsters. But there's a large ground zone, and they really tried with this place. It's quite interesting. There's a sort of big alien city at one end, and you talk to a load of people and you're helping them fight their war, and there is literally trench warfare going on most of the way up this mountain. And at the far end there's some canyons and a big Vadoir spaceship underneath which you get to fight off their big commander and stuff. So quite a well crafted, structured zone that leads you through level bands. And I guess they imagined people would be spending loads of time, you know, doing this thing. The whole place is chock full of public quests in the sort of Warhammer Online sense of the word. You know, yeah. you go every so often a big circle will appear on the map and anyone nearby can help contribute to a progress bar by doing various different activities, killing stuff nearby, whatever. And, you know, these are going on throughout the place, all the way up and down this thing. There's a quest chain that leads you through from sort of little outpost as you work your way up, fighting your way through the trenches. It was quite fun, but it is massively let down by two things. For starters, aggro radius is crazy in there. So it is really a really difficult slog soloing your way through this zone, because stuff's like aggroing from all over the place and you're just constantly fighting. I mean, it really gives you a kind of Saving Private Ryan shell shock as you work your way out up through this thing. But the real problem is that they just seem not to have understood that people might want to play as a little static group team and go through there, because the trouble we had when we've been trying to play as a group of players in there, proper actual, you know, in-game supported yeah. group, it's just awful. For starters, you more often than not, you end up scattered amongst the different instances when you teleport down there. It just cannot, and it just refuses very often to put us all in the same instance so we can see each other. Almost always one of us will have to use the drop down, or we'll all have to, because it doesn't have any kind of flexibility. It will say 15 players in the zone, right, that's it. And if you know, players 1 and 2 in your group make that number 15, then players 3 and 4 are going to end up in the one next door.
I do wonder, in that situation,
no flexibility at all. You ought to be able to keep groups yeah. together. That should be a priority over anything else.
I wonder, in that situation,
solo players don't
it just
care
means that nobody's grouping with organised grouping at all in the game.
Well, this is what I'm starting to think, yeah. So that's a problem. Then when we're all doing our quest chain through, then of course we're all on different stages of it. So when we talk to the guy, we end up with about four or five different quests on the go. Yeah. Now who's on this stage? Because don't want to end up breaking or preempting this. And certain teleporters from place to place only work if you've unlocked the relevant part of the story chain. So some of us could teleport to this base, and some of us couldn't, and some of us had to walk. The zone is the crazy aggro in that zone is such that when you beam down, you're allowed to take two of your away team with you instead of the usual four.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a group, in which case it then sort of only lets the first player bring two, and then somehow it just really went crazy. It was all over the place. We ended up massively penalised. Basically, if you're in a group, you're not allowed to take anyone down except to make the group up to five.
Yeah.
So what you find is that if there are four of you soloing together in that zone, basically if you'll sort of go down and just move across the place doing the same public quests and doing the same quest chain but individually, you have like 12 of you, because each of you can yeah. bring your two people, whereas if you do it as a proper group, there's five of you.
Yeah.
Because it only allows five. So that was stupid. Then we're finding that quest steps, there's one particular quest that It just ended the evening for us. You know, effectively a rage quit from a couple of us for that night, because we got to this hilltop and we have to recover some data from some crates. Fair enough, you know, standard MMO fare. The crates glow, you know, just to show you which ones they are. There's a big circle on the mini map. Okay, find some crates around here. And what we found is that we all had the quest. So we need 6 crates. Okay, so what we found is the each person that used a crate, it only ticked off for their own quest.
Yes.
So we, in fact, needed 24 crates. Unfortunately, there are only 6 crates.
Ah.
Well, there are only 8 crates or so. There was a few extras. But basically, every time one of us used a crate, it ticked off for them, but then didn't relight up and didn't tick off for the others. So we basically exhausted all the crates and they never started glowing again.
That sounds tested.
I know. Could not complete. Basically, what should happen there is if anyone tags a crate, it should tick off for everyone in the group, but it didn't. And it just meant that because these crates weren't coming back, because this was essentially a non-repeatable one-time quest, it's part of the story. So the crates didn't light up again. So in the end, we solved it. And, you know, when we could face coming back to this nightmare again, we thought clearly the problem here is that we are friends that want to play together and the game is just not designed for that at all. I may have vented on Twitter about it, but what we tried was not grouping, so we're all there, individual players, abandon the quest, re-pick the quest up, and then all run out there and do it separately. And we found that each individual player, who not in a group, saw their own boxes and they weren't stopping glowing when each player then clicked them.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous. It's like they've designed it specifically to be only completable. Well, it's not that they designed it. I think they only ever tested it for solo players.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, just the pinnacle of a new MMO age that we're in now. No, pretty much all the problems, because we have this weird thing where we're a group of friends on Mumble who like to play together, and so we think, well, massively multiplayer online games, that must be the right thing for that. And what happens is that we stumble into problem after problem after problem, where quite clearly being in a group has not been tested. It's not even occurred to the QA team to be a test case. You know, they've tested it for solo players, ship it, it's fine. And that's just insane. So, but how is it insane? Is that just people just solo in MMOs now and only have a group to do LFG dungeon finders?
Quite possibly. Also, there's
what happens for static groups who want to play through from one to the, you know, levels to the cap as a team together? That almost never happens.
There's also the possibility, of course, that this game is in such dire financial straits that they're just skimping on all testing.
Well, I think that's the... Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I suppose MMO... Speaking as a QA professional in real life, I think I would absolutely hate to have to test a massively multiplayer online game. It's a ridiculously complex product with way more use cases. You know, I mean, people, aficionados of MMOs often, you know, when they launch broken and are a right old mess, people just shrug and go, well, it's an MMO. They're like that.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to have this conversation with people who only ever play console single player titles or console LAN titles or whatever, you know, having to defend the shocking state of the industry.
Console LAN titles.
Well, whatever, you know, whatever matchmaking they do. But just having to sort of defend the state of MMOs by just shrugging and going, well, that's what they're like. That seems to have filtered back into the industry to the point where, you know, the people...
No one cares.
We won't bother funding sufficient QA to test this thoroughly because, well, you know, I mean, in QA, you look at two things. You look at risk. You look at how likely is this to go wrong? And you look at impact. If it goes wrong, how bad is it going to be? And the impact of a massively multiplayer online game, I mean, except in perhaps some of the cases around cash shop and billing, the impact, you know, things where an MMO accidentally takes 12 months worth of subscription off of someone instead of 1 month. I've seen that happen before, and that kind of thing makes people furious. But apart from that, what's the big deal if people, you know, if Tim can't group with his friends going through a ground zone in some remote corner of Star Trek Online? Yeah. No one cares, really.
No one cares.
No, it's never going to be fixed. And the next thing they design is probably going to be just as broken, and no one will care either, really. So there we go. There's me ranting, you know, tilting at windmills as ever.
Yeah.
We're still going. We got off of that bloody planet this week. Me and Teppo helped the other two get through. We managed to figure it out the week before that we shouldn't group. If you don't group, it works well.
Yeah.
So we did that, and we got right the way through that story chain and off that planet and back into the space missions on the Delta Quadrant now. I want to get to the Iconian War stuff. I want to get to the New Dawn stuff that's the current stuff.
Have you said they're soloing it? You'll be there by now.
Well, it's finding the time. I'm not inclined to play Star Trek Online any other time because I, you know, keep hurting my myself during Christmas events and stuff. And I need to save my mental resolve because the summer thing will be along soon, and I'll have I'll have to fly jetpack through hoops every day for 40 days, and you know, whatever. Grr, I'm ranting. There we go. So anyway, MMOs, rubbish. Don't play them. Over to you.
I've been playing Disney Infinity.
Okay.
Yes, but more importantly, I've been playing it in couch co-op.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm being forced to issue a...
Rather than the meticulous scientific conditions of the lab here.
Yeah, well, actually, it was in the lab here, but it was two of us playing on the same pad thing with different characters.
How does that work? Does it seem to do what it's supposed to?
Yes, it does. It goes split screen, either vertical or horizontal, depending on if you're in space or underground.
I haven't played split screen anything in decades. I'm sure I could.
But I was playing that with a girlfriend, and it's been quite interesting. We played the Star Wars one, because why not? And because, you know, we played it a bit, if you remember back, and we got to Hoth, and then...
And you were I lost focus a bit, I have to say.
You completely lost focus. And so we got past that bit and continued on. So we were playing that, and, you know, the bits on the ground are quite good. The space battles are almost good.
Hmm.
That's the problem. There's a couple of space battles.
It's a bit of a sort of arcadey space shooters. Is it on rails or a proper flyabout, go places, do stuff?
The going for the asteroid, escaping from Hoth, going for the asteroid, is on rails.
Okay.
We're just shooting stuff. But then there's one where at Endor, where you've got Home One and the medical frigate, and you've got to defend them against ships coming from either side.
So sort of approaching X-Wing, TIE fighter.
It's very much approaching X-Wing.
Wow. You wouldn't expect that from Infinity. Mind you, Infinity seem to be putting all sorts of bonkers sub-games into there these days.
Yeah, they do. But, you know, the flight model's not that great, and you've got this massive targeting reticle in the middle of the thing where it doesn't seem that accurate. But it flies well.
Yeah.
We got completely bogged down on that and had to rage quit, though, because we couldn't get past it.
Oh, dear. You shouldn't expect rage quitting from a Disney Infinity game. No. That's no.
It's the other problem. There's changing levels of difficulty throughout the game, where will be really difficult, some won't. I mean, one of the levels...
Is that different skills being used, or just a poorly applied sort of continuity?
No, just some areas are more difficult than others. There's one bit where we were assaulting the... shield transmitter on Endor.
Yep.
And we got through all of the characters we could get through, and we're down to the Rebels characters, the Star Wars Rebels characters, before we actually managed to do it. Because there are AT-STs, which are...
You can just start dropping like Inside Out characters on there or something. Fair enough.
It does not allow that, which is a shame. And so,
Captain America would probably sort it out.
The thing I can compare this game to the most, these level packs, is a Lego game, which is ironic, really, because Lego being the...
Well, it's a similar spirit, I suppose. Yeah.
So you get the Star Wars original trilogy Lego game back in the day. God, that's way back in the day.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Which was really good and did lots and lots of stuff. This completely cuts out Cloud City... cuts out loads of chunks of bits. You don't go to Tatooine at the start of Jedi.
Wow. So why not? Why is that?
It's just a really limited number of levels. It could have been stretched out a lot longer if they'd wanted.
So it sounds like they missed huge amounts of the source material just to compress it into one single manageable game. Or?
Yeah, I think so. When you're leaving Hoth, it does the whole "I'm your father" speech when Vader turns up there, and they have a little bit of a battle there. Just because, you know, at that point you're thinking,
the whole generation of kids going to grow up completely not knowing the classics. Yeah.
We're not going to Cloud City, are we? No. We go straight to Endor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then skip to the end.
It plays reasonably well. It's a reasonably good game. It's just not a brilliant game. It's nowhere near as good as the Lego standalone games.
Yeah.
And, I still remain to be convinced that...
Is it a question of the scope of the whole project sort of getting, or demands that the individual offerings are much shorter and smaller?
That's the thing, because each individual level you get comes with...
Because they are levels, aren't they? They're not games. Yeah. It's a level that goes with a thing, and then that's somehow tied together with some lobby thing, I guess?
Well, no, there's a bunch of levels. You get this little plastic thing, which you put on the control surface, which then says, do you want to go to this level?
Okay.
And you click yes, and it takes you to the level. And then you just play through like you would on a normal game.
Yeah.
But the problem is, the things you get in the level packs do not have any discs.
Mm.
So everything is in the base game.
Oh, Right, yeah.
So I get the feeling they might be a little bit constrained. You know, they can't put 50 gigs worth of game on a DVD and ship with it.
No, because they're not shipping DVDs at all. Yeah. It's just these little plastic, and essentially what are unlock keys. So so everything in this thing has already been there from the start?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Or patched in over time. And okay, a lot of it is built using the in-game mechanics. What Infinity basically is a toolkit. It's a platform. It's a toolkit for making games.
Yes.
And they give you some access to this through the main game where you can make your own levels.
Okay.
But obviously the people who are making...
But the engine itself is going to be pretty fixed until the next big release of it.
Yeah, so basically what happens when they want to add a new character, you're just adding a character to this engine.
Yeah.
And so they've got a studio. When the new studio takes over and starts doing work on it, they say, could you update these version 2? Well, in this case, they say, could you update these version 2 characters to version 3?
Yeah.
You will learn how the engine works by doing it. And they did that, and it worked. Then they went and made the Star Wars one, I think it
was.
But...
It's a clever system from a development perspective. It saves a lot of reuse, encourages reuse rather than saves a lot of reinventing the wheel and so on.
It's got voice acting.
You can probably throw content out much quicker than if you were just making a fresh game each time.
Yeah, I think it's a very clever thing. I just think that these level packs need to be bigger.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah, how good is that from a consumer's perspective? Yeah. Are we are you losing out because of the limitations of the basic sort of framework?
Yeah, I think you really are because they're just not that big. And also, that there's the wildly differing experiences and difficulty levels are very inconsistent because it becomes a platform rather than a game.
Yeah, yeah.
After we rage quit the Star Wars one, we went to play the Inside Out one.
Yeah.
And that is just a you can never fail jump around gathering stuff.
So are these aimed at different demographics?
Yeah, I think they are.
Presumably, the Inside Out stuff's aimed at a slightly younger gamer.
I would imagine so, yeah. Mm. But then, and also, then I think that the Marvel fighting one, which I mentioned last week, is aimed at slightly older gamer.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a weird.
Well, it's interesting that you can achieve those different types of experience through the same, what essentially is the same toolkit, just reskinning, you know, a character and a level each time.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I'd love to find out more about what their actual design goals are in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's something they're not going to talk about.
No.
Yeah. So no, it's all good and fun, and I need to go back and complete this space battle.
You can do it. Use the Force. Switch off your aiming computer.
It's a defending 2 points in
space. Oh, escort mission. Well, when you say so, nobody wants that. I mean, those are always the hardest ones in X-Wing. You know, is to keep the so and so alive, try and work out, memorize where the bombers are coming in from and what angles and so on.
Yeah, and of course, it had the problem with me wanting to think. I just want them to make a new X-Wing now, don't you? Because, you know, I think that...
We live in an age of spiritual successors. I think someone will put together something that broadly scratches the itch and release it on Steam at some point, I'm sure. It won't be an actual Star Wars game, but there'll be something close enough, I'm sure. Keep an eye out.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so it's still reasonably good. It's just I wish all these level packs were longer.
Mm, fair enough. So I'm going to talk about Civilization 5. I'm hip, I'm with it. Edge. Yeah,
completely.
Yeah, so this is ahead of our Civ 5 go at the Games Cupboard Friday land game type thing, because I'd never actually played it. I dusted off my old discs for Civ 4, a game I have an enduring fondness for and probably think is my favourite of the series. But that fired up a whole load of Secure-ROM nonsense, which Windows 10 stamped on quite firmly. So that's never going to work again, unless I emulate and run XP in a virtual machine or some crazy like that. Life's too short for that kind of thing. So I went off and got Civ 5, which is about 20 quid in Steam, so not too bad. And I thought, right, I better actually have a go at this if I'm proposing to face off a load of people who know how it works in deadly mortal civilizational combat. So I've been playing that over the week, dipping in here and there. Still retains that just one more turn feel. I've been staying up far too late some nights playing that. Interesting. So obviously, it's the differences that sort of make it, I suppose. Everyone knows Civilization and the basic structure of it. You started with a little settler in like 10,000 BC, and you just work forward through time, turn by turn, expanding, improving, inventing, conquering, and so on. Until you either have killed everyone else or have made the most groovy and relaxed and most cultural civilization, and the way they do that now is interesting, or you science your way off the planet to Alpha Centauri at the end, which is always my preferred favourite victory condition. I do tend to like to go for the fine, I don't want this planet anyway, you lot can squabble over it, bye. That always gives me a smug sense, self-sense satisfaction. So hexagons. Hexagons is the big thing with Civ 5. Instead of, because previously it had all been played on a square grid. Seems to work all right. I mean, hexagons seem to work best for large-scale terrain anyway in a variety of game formats, so useful there. Non-stacking units. Can't pile them up. That's a real blow. That's really. I have yet to try a proper military campaign. Normally, I just potter about and try and appease everyone and then get off the planet at the first opportunity. But I'm wondering how, because typically when I do go all military, I tend to build massive stacks of Apache helicopters and cavalry units or whatever, and then just sort of slide that stack around the enemy's empire until it's all gone.
Is this feature not in there to stop you doing that? The world's largest army and just stomping everything in
your way? Yeah, pretty much. You can't put... there are some exceptions. So worker units and settlers can stack with other units, but military units can't stack. They each have to live in their own hexagon, which means you can only have one unit defending a city as well, which cuts down. I mean, basically, I've worked out as I've been playing that most of the refinements between 4 and 5 are specifically targeted at me and the way I play.
Yeah,
which is somewhat irksome. But I don't know. I suppose I'd get used to it. I mean, I never saw the point in the upgrading the units in previous games. If they did well, they earned a little XP bar of each one, and then you could give them different abilities when they level up. They could be 25% better in jungles, that kind of thing. You gain the medic ability where they heal quite quickly.
Yeah, the medic was always good, and the city assault one was always
good. City assault, 25% bonuses hacking cities, that kind of thing. That never really made any sense, really, because you just throw these things out once you've got a large enough nationwide infrastructure. You just have every city churning
only
them out.
Only if you had no idea of finesse.
Well, that's it. This game now forces finesse on you because you have to. You basically have to try and keep and preserve the units. Interesting another thing is that strategic resources, things like discovering iron or horses or whatever in your lands, you put the appropriate improvement structure on those and that resource becomes available. And what they seem to be doing now is that you actually spend those... So say if you got five, you find three iron mines in your kingdom when you discover iron working. If you mine all those, you get 3 iron appear on the title bar. And as you build units that need iron, that goes back down. Presumably when they die, it comes back up again. But basically, that means that if you can only have 3 iron units. Whereas in 4 and previous, if you had any iron at all in your empire, you could build as many iron units as you liked. That's different. That means you have to sort of spend your resources a bit more carefully. Barbarian units. The whole barbarian thing is just off the blinking scale now. I mean, they sort of dabbled with that a bit on 4. So basically, barbarians is a sort of no empire random military units who just charge around in the very early game attacking everything they can. And they seem to be a lot more developed now. There's a lot more of them. They tech up for it quite quickly as well. And pretty much any space where a city could be, if no one builds a city there within so many turns, a barbarian encampment will appear there.
Yeah.
And that whole system seems to have been really ratcheted up and aimed at me, basically, because I like to turtle up in the early game and dig in and really develop quickly so that I can out-tech everyone before I even touch a military weapon. But now the barbarian frequency and raiding just forces you to, gun up pretty quickly. You have to tool up very early on and have a lot of fast military units, chariots and whatever, running around putting out fires, basically. Don't like it. City-states. This is a new thing with Civ 5, I've seen. They seem to be much larger, self-contained single-city empires that are sort of NPC empires, and there's loads of those in there now. And I think that's a good change, because that sort of gets rid of one of the problems with the very early game in Civ 4 and before, is that you can go for about 100 turns without seeing anyone or anything.
Yeah.
And you're just building roads and farms and sawmills and things for that time. But right from the word go, even if you'd never meet another player or another sort of, proper enemy empire, you've got lots of these little neighbouring city-states that are surprisingly well-developed and who are capable of actually trading with you, providing military units. They have each have their own little reputation bar that you have to keep an eye on. You can give them gifts of gold or units or whatever to keep them friendly. Every so often, they'll set you quests as well, effectively missions. They'll say, we want you to build a great wonder of the world or a great person or whatever, or connect a road to us or provide us with this particular resource. And if you do that, their reputation goes up. And as they go up through the different ranks of friendly, allied and whatever, you can start to use their strategic resources. You can see their stuff. They effectively become more sensors for your empire. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll regularly start producing military units and just giving them to you, which is an interesting mechanic. So effectively, you sort of have, they sort of take on the role of NPC shopkeepers in a way, quest givers. You can, of course, just charge in there and lay siege and destroy them and build your own city instead, I guess. I haven't tried that yet. So the civics are different. That's interesting. They got rid of the whole thing where you choose what sort of government you want. You have your revolution, and then suddenly there's a whole load of pluses and minuses that weren't there before because you're now a democracy instead of a feudalism or whatever. That all seems to have gone away, and now you've got the culture bar, which goes up through producing culture points, like in previous games, which does expand your local borders, which is useful. But also that contributes to a big progress bar, which each time that fills up, you can choose from what now seems to be some kind of talent tree.
Yeah.
The socials there, it's effectively how to you can win a social victory by completely filling in five of the sets of blocks are there. I mean, each time you fill the bar, you can pick one more thing out of one of the categories, and if you fill in five categories, I think each category's got five things you can pick, and each thing takes the sort of the place of the original government perks and benefits. So that's a bit weird and a bit interesting. I mean, you can sort of play on a, it sort of becomes an alternate technology victory, but on a different kind of bar. So you sort of win by just gaining so many of these perk points that no one else can keep up, and that's your cultural victory, I guess. I've not got to the spaceship yet, but I'm still plodding through on the first game. and I'm obviously authoritative enough to talk about it here. Yes. Interesting, yeah. I mean, it still looks and sounds fantastic. They've really done a really good job with the sort of terrain and the individual little units and the cities and stuff. And that was always the enduring appeal, I think, for all the Civilization games, even going back to the sort of CGA Civ 1 there. But is the sort of glorious mapping of it all, the cartography of it all, and seeing the landscape, yeah, and sort of cutting down forests and laying down new roads and cities, the actual city buildings all taking on different styles depending on what empire you're working with. The leader screens there, talking to your leaders, that's quite an interest. You know, you get to negotiate and do the diplomacy there. But as well as, you know, the traditional deals and stuff and declarations you can set, you can denounce the various empires, which is basically just, I'm going to badmouth you to everyone else, which is a way of increasing the hostility for everyone else to a target. And if you can, I mean, I keep having that done to me, but I don't tend to use that as a pretext just to go to war. The problem with me, it's not so much that I'm an insane pacifist, it's that I always want one slightly more high-tech gun before I go for it, you know. I'm never quite ready to go on the massive offensive, but when I do tend to just exterminate whole empires. But then I'm usually so near getting to the spaceship anyway, I might as well just crack on with that. So, yeah, very pleasing. It's that sort of... It very much maintains the same sort of rhythm of gameplay, with the sort of click, next turn, you know, sending people off to do stuff, seeing this empire gradually improving, getting bigger, getting more railroads everywhere, fields and farms and so on, and just seeing the points of it all build up. So I'm really enjoying it. I'm not sure... I don't know. I suppose, yeah, it is a refinement rather than a whole new game. I've not played any of the... What's the latest one? Is it After Earth? Beyond Earth,
yeah, something like that.
And then there was the Alpha Centauri remake as well, which I've also not seen, but they all use the hexagons as well, essentially modifications and advancements of this. I mean, Civ 5 itself is actually fairly old, isn't it?
It is actually, yeah, a couple years old now.
It's got a low res opening cutscene there. I thought, oh, blimey.
But I get really annoyed by low res opening cutscenes.
Yeah, I know. How difficult it is to scale that kind of stuff to HD?
That's the problem. They're running HD, and I'm running higher than HD.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's definitely a first world problem there, I think. But I'm quite satisfied with what I've played so far. I think it is you know, a worthy successor in the series. But and that's just as well, because I'm not going to be able to play any of the older ones unless I go for sort of crazy DOS boxes and emulation and stuff. It seems good. I mean, they've gotten rid of religion, which is interesting. I remember them getting a bit of flack.
World.
They got I remember them getting a bit of flack about that before. Civ 4 had a sort of a gameplay mechanic for the spread of I think 7 major world real life religions, and you know, they would spread from city to city, and there would be various structures and
it was
buildings.
A more innocent age.
And I, you know, they went to loads of pains in the manual and in the help text and stuff to explain that, you know, we don't think any particular religion's better or worse than any other. We're just, and effectively they didn't inherently apply any specific value judgments to particular religions. They just functioned as different coloured mechanics.
Yeah.
So and they were all equal to each other, which is, you know, quite a progressive view. Perhaps that itself caused them problems.
That itself is problematic.
Yes. So there's just no... I mean, you can build temples and that's about it, really. I mean, I don't even know if cathedral's a thing in the building, in the unit structure in there now. But they've just sort of gotten rid of that entirely. They've still got the great person mechanic. Every so often a hero from the past will appear, you know, yeah. Like... Bark or Louis Armstrong was one.
Did you put them in charge of an army and send them into battle?
I got given a general very early on, and because I didn't quite understand the to and fro of basic hexagonal mechanics there, I got that killed by barbarians straight away because he didn't make it to the army he was supposed to lead in time.
So I thought, believe you send the army to the general?
Yes, I know that now. Yes, I shall do that next time. But yeah, so you can use those to sort of boost particular areas of your civilization. Just really a sort of pleasant and familiar feel, but with enough tweaks and refinements. Just strange little things that sort of throw you. I mean, I do feel like I'm going to have to learn again, you know. I mean, you think you know it, but it's not the same.
Well, is that not what you want from a sequel?
I suppose so, yeah. You don't want just, well, I don't know, do I? What I really want is to be able to play the old game I quite liked, but I can't now because of technology, because of reasons.
Run Windows 95 in DOSBox.
I'll try something like that and see what happens, but it's a lot of faff, and Civ 5 seems to do the job well. I mean, things. So here's an example. Granary. What does a granary do?
It increases your rate of population growth.
Adds food, yeah. But in all the civs up to 5, it also meant that when you created it, when you had enough food to make a new person in a city,
yeah,
it would leave you with half of the food left still.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't do that now. It just gives you plus food.
Of the design goals was to cut down the number of cities you have.
Yeah, well, I just am sort of refusing to accept that design goal, and my empire's all over the place. I'm generating far too much unhappiness because of the number of cities. Yeah. But, but you know, the aqueduct does what the granary used to do. The aqueduct now does that function. Whereas in previous civs, the aqueduct was required to let your city grow over a certain number of people. So you see little things like that, and they're everywhere in there. So it's you've got to really sort of pay attention and actually read stuff because, I mean, as I'm finding, just rocking up to it from a previous civ game and thinking, yeah, I know how this works, you really don't. I mean, the unhappiness, things like that, that's all done on a civilizational scale now, not on each individual city. Back in the previous versions, you had to put people in particular fields or take them out and turn them into scientists or entertainers or whatever. None of that anymore. That's all done on a whole empire basis, yeah, which is better, more refined, that kind of thing. So yeah, interesting things. And yeah, it's interesting seeing the tech tree. I think it goes up to nanotechnology now before it goes into future tech. So it's interesting sort of.
It's interesting to watch the future tech get pushed into the real tech as you play each version.
Absolutely. Particle physics is up there as well. Don't remember seeing that before. So, yeah, I'm quite liking it. I think I've got the basics enough to not come last when we do our big Friday game. But I got off. No illusions about me winning,
oh, no.
I don't think.
Somebody's going to get all military and kill you instantly.
Absolutely.
Go military and kill him instantly.
I'm essentially a peace-loving species, which is going to get exterminated very early on. But it'll be interesting to see how everyone else does. I think the spectator mode of it all works well, so that people can watch the rest of the game as well. Be interesting. So yeah, we're going to try. I don't know what we'll try. We'll try the see how far you get in 3 hours. I expect there are enough game setup options that can let a game move quite quickly, like quick turns and make sure there's lots of people on quite a small space, that sort of thing. Various scenario setup options hopefully will let that happen, and we'll see how we go. Probably the best way to do it, I think, probably will be a play by email thing, but yeah, as well. But there's no reason why we can't do both. So we'll give that a go. I shall hopefully manage to finish at least one game to a victory condition before then. Yeah, anyway,
it's unlikely.
Over to you.
I'm going to briefly talk about Vermintide.
Okay.
Which is the Games Workshop Fighting Skaven Left 4 Dead type game.
Left 4 Dead with Skaven.
Yeah, basically. Mm. And it really is. I was playing co-op with someone, and that someone... again being the same person, and we were getting completely trounced. Admittedly, we were drunk.
Okay,
that
right.
Should be made clear.
Drunken reviewing.
It turns out that both of us were drunk at the time,
right?
And we were doing really badly, but we kept being hit by special enemies who kept killing us. And so I'm going to formally say maybe that Left 4 Dead thing wasn't just you.
That Left 4 Dead thing was just me. No, everyone else, the other three people who I was playing with at the time said they'd never seen it do that before.
Yeah,
and I just I don't know. I turned up. Hello, I'm new. And it just decided to utterly crush me. Yeah. So anyway, I don't play Left 4 Dead
anymore.
We
were in a group of two people. We need to play it again with a group of four people. It is a fantastically brilliant game, and I do love it. It looks gorgeous, plays lovely, and it does that Warhammer Fantasy universe perfectly well.
It's nice to know there is some sort of Games Workshop type game that's decent that's out there still at the moment. It's all doing stuff.
Oh, there's plenty. Because
I thought they'd just dispersed the license to anyone who wanted to go, and there's a load of rubbish stuff
odds
now.
The statistical odds are, though, that occasionally you'll get a Vermintide or you'll get a Battlefleet Gothic, which appears to be good from what I've played so far, but not enough to actually talk about it because it's not actually out yet.
Okay.
So there are these really good games. A Vermintide is categorically a very, very good game.
Cool. I'll just have to keep an eye out for that.
Yes, I think people should play that. And that's all I'm going to say on that for now, because I need to get more successful experiences in it.
Try winning and then talking about it. Yeah. All right, well, do your spiel.
You can go along to HelloMurderTime.com, where you can see all our previous episodes. And you can go along to YouTube, where you can see our Regrowth series, where we are currently fighting our way. Actually, no, we've just been dealing with fish.
Fish,
there's
mostly
been a lot of fishing.
It's fishing. Yeah.
I remembered. I was editing the fishing ones.
Yes.
That's why we needed titanium in the first place for your cooling.
Oh, I can make fish tanks now. Right.
The handy thing about being a couple of weeks behind on the editing, blimey, it means that I actually remember why we started doing stuff by the time we finish it.
Okay, I better get on with that then.
And we can do that this week. Yeah, you can also catch our video versions of this show and all the previous shows and all our other series we've done so far.
Cool.
If you like the show, give us a subscribe or a like so that YouTube won't get a bit confused and stop putting it in your feed. And you can join us next week where we're going to have more of the same.
Okay, well, with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.